Hi, Morgan Freeman here. I want to talk to you about a serious rare heart condition called ATTR cardiac amyloidosis, or ATTR-CM. Now, I don't have the condition myself, but if you're living with ATTR-CM, it's important to know about treatment options like Attruby, also known as acoramidis, because you have the power of choice when it comes to treatment. Attruby is an old medicine used to treat adults with ATTR-CM to reduce death and hospitalization due to heart issues. Tell your doctor if you are pregnant, plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding, and about the medications you take. The most common side effects were mild and included diarrhea and abdominal pain. If you have ATTR-CM, talk to your cardiologist about Attruby or visit Attruby.com. That's ATTRUBY.com to learn more. It's time to get busy living.
Yes, and yes, I think most Manchester United fans would agree with you. One of the best paid footballers in the world, and he's nowhere near that level.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
U.S. Sport
on Off the Ball
with 888 Casino, 18 plus eGamblingCare.ie.
Yep, it's 2 days before Christmas, but the NFL don't sleep at this time of year, and neither do we, Keane Fahey. We're on.
Yeah, it's 2 days before Christmas. I feel like I've already eaten everything in sight and drank way too much, so I've got to work on Christmas Day, unlike everyone else who's having a great time off. Like you said, the NFL doesn't stop. Not only does it not stop, it ramps up on Christmas Day,
which is
great, but also terrible for some people.
Well, this is a new thing, and it's I saw them yesterday in their advertising for it. Obviously, Netflix have basically bought NFL Christmas Day and forced it upon people, and I'm sure the NBA are devastated as they used to own it. But I did see them hinting towards a possible, you know, start of a new annual tradition. And it's like, oh my God, the NFL are just going to take over Christmas as well as Thanksgiving in America. And apparently the early start of games is not, it's not without us in mind, actually. They want people in Europe to be able to watch the games as well in their Christmas evenings. So the takeover continues and we're all for it, I suppose.
And I mean, you can get the signal of intent straight off the bat just by the teams you've gotten it, because they haven't thrown us the Jaguars like they were throwing at London a few years ago. They've given you the three best quarterbacks in the league. Well, not the three best quarterbacks in the league, but the three best high-profile quarterbacks in the league, maybe. Maybe you could argue that. But you've got a matchup there between the Steelers and the Chiefs, which is historically incredible, but even current for this season, incredible. And then you've got the Texans and the Ravens, two teams that got young, dynamic quarterbacks who you expect to be contending, not necessarily for a Super Bowl, but deep in the playoffs at a minimum, you know. So Netflix have a lot of money. We know that. Netflix can have enough money to get the attention of the NFL and have some sway with the NFL. And the reward we're getting is a more worldly view of the NFL. A more worldly decision makings for the NFL, which helps me and you who are nerds enough to be probably watching this on Christmas Day. But I'm not sure how much of the normal people they're trying to get to or will actually pay attention to it.
Yeah, I know a Chiefs fan who probably will mind me telling the story and probably will, you know, is the type that will listen, who is, you know, in a new house with his partner, their first Christmas together, not with their families and so on. And he is looking for advice on how to navigate spending the evening watching the Kansas City Chiefs at 6 o'clock on Christmas night. My advice for what
Good
it's
luck.
Worth, my advice for what it's worth was don't, you know, just yes. Don't push it. It's not worth it. You'll see all of what you need to see in the game anyway. But anyway, listen, we'll probably talk specifically about those games and how important they are. But I suppose the highlight from last night, it was another kind of an interesting Sunday. This time of year is so hit and miss because teams are fighting for their lives or teams are already out of it or teams are tanking or don't know how to tank in the case of the Las Vegas Raiders. But I suppose what we did see yesterday was possibly the birth of a new era in Atlanta. Michael Penix Jr. comes in. It looks like Kirk Cousins will be cut before his bonus is due in March, and his experiment in Atlanta did not work out. But you saw enough in Penix. They hammered the Giants, which is nothing to write home about. We don't need to even talk. Like, the Giants are the worst team in the NFL. They're happy enough to do that, to be that way at the moment. I suppose they're heading towards the number one pick. But from what you saw of Penix, like, for me, again, just watching highlights, seemed like solid. Knew what he was doing out there. Can move around the pocket, which Kirk Cousins certainly couldn't. but enough to kind of bring them through the playoffs, because this is a team very much in contention.
By the way, you say that Kirk Cousins' experiment failed. It failed for the Falcons. Kirk Cousins just picked up $100 million guaranteed for 14 games. I'm pretty sure he's happy enough to hit free agency again next year and get another $100 million contract. We knew this game was going to go well, because the first thing we saw on the TV broadcast was a Falcons fan holding up a sign going, "Patriots, Bears, do you have Phoenix envy?" So it was a great start to that game. And by the end of the fourth quarter, I think there might have been a little bit there, because... look, if you look at his stats, nothing impressive. It's like zero touchdowns, one interception, had completed a few passes, had minimal yardage, not anything spectacular. But if you look at the actual game and the way the game developed, you say the Giants are a really bad team, and you're right, they're a terrible football team. But the Falcons were still getting stuck in these third and longs over and over again. And part of that was receivers dropping the ball. Now, we have to talk about one thing here that always comes up that I used to kind of brush off because it sounded like a little bit of nonsense, something like that American thing where they overanalyze things and they talk about too much of the minutiae involved in playing football, and they try and hype it up to this point where it's the most technical game in the world. But so many people have said it to me over the years, and so many examples of it have been there. When you change from a right-handed quarterback to a left-handed quarterback, the receivers struggle. And what happened on that start of that game was Phoenix hit two throws early on. Both of them are dropped. One by Ray McLeod on a comeback route, one by Drake London on a crossing route. And that contributed to putting the offense behind the down and distance throughout the first half of the game. So he was in these third and eights, third and sevens, third and nines. And what you were seeing was a level of poise and composure that you just do not expect from a rookie at any point. And this is the thing about Phoenix coming out. He had a bunch of injuries in college, I believe. He played at Washington. He was at Washington. And what really stood out with his college tape was how well he played within the pocket. He moved around in the pocket. He made these great decisions within the pocket. And it all comes down to the way his feet move. He makes these very subtle, small movements that allow him to adjust to pressure while still reading the defense downfield. And straight away, Falcons fans got that. They had to wait for 14 games, obviously, with Kirk Cousins. But straight away, he came in and was like, "Oh, this is like college to me. I can read where the defense is going. I can figure out where the ball needs to go." He had his first third and eight in the game. He looks out to his right, and he's got man coverage out there, and the coverage is closed up, and the Giants have blitzed and they're disguised their coverage, and they got a linebacker waiting over the middle, waiting for him to throw an interception right to him. Phoenix Jr. looks the linebacker off, comes back at the perfect time, gets the ball out just before the rush comes home, and hits his crossing route over the middle. And you're kind of thinking to yourself, "Oh yeah, Patrick Mahomes does that all the time. Lamar Jackson does that all the time. Josh Allen can do that all the time. CJ Stroud, all those guys do that all the time." The rookie quarterbacks, like Caleb Williams, might do that every so often, but he's not doing that repeatedly. He's not giving you that foundation of running an offense where the footwork's good, the decision-making is good, the timing is good, and that's a really, really strong start, because you can build out from there and expand from there. I'd be very, very excited after, as much as you can be after one game, if I was a Falcons fan.
Yeah, so you look at what your rookie quarterback is doing in his first few starts, and you start thinking about the future. But in terms of the present, Atlanta have the tiebreak over the Bucs in that division. They beat them twice. They're very much in it. You get into the playoffs in the NFC, again, like Detroit are very banged up, though they continue to be very, very impressive. Vikings are impressive. The Eagles, we don't know how long Jalen Hurts is going to be out for. He was out for concussion. You would imagine by law of averages, he's probably only going to miss a week, if even. So the Eagles are obviously impressive. But there's games to be won there in the NFC. Would you be confident enough that Penix can manage through, you know, let's put it this way. You're betting against them at a home game in round one, aren't you?
Yeah, probably. But I mean, you are with Kirk Cousins too. That's a Falcons
sure.
thing.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying
Phoenix,
that it just doesn't put the Falcons back into the Kirk Cousins thing was over. They were falling apart. It probably steadies the boat a little bit, but it doesn't launch them in as a contender in the NFC.
Well, the fact that the Bucs lost last night as well now means they're both at 8-7, so they're in a great position. They're going to be most likely the home playoff team in the first round. So the thing about it is, based on just that game last night, and look, it's going to be more of a challenge. Like, the more he plays, obviously, the more flaws will come out. The more positives will come out too. But like, based on that game, the way they ran their offense was really critical. Because one thing we've talked about here previously is Bijan Robinson not being used properly. He's got over 20 carries, I believe, in each of his last two games now. But not only that, they were anchoring the offense on him. Even when they were up like 31-7 or whatever it was, up by three or three scores, whatever it was, they were still handing the ball to Robinson on early downs. It wasn't, "Oh, let's get Tyler Algier Sheeran here and get him his touches and make sure he gets the ball. It was, Bijan, you got a first down carry, right? You're getting a second down carry. You need to come out. Okay, come on out. Now you're going back in, now that you're able to go again. It wasn't a case of them pulling Bijan off the field. It was a case of him going, kind of making decisions of, I'm tired here, I need a rest, give me a rest when I need it. All right, now I can give you the value of these explosive plays. And because you have a lot of explosive players in that offense, Robinson, London, you do have the potential to upset anyone, especially if you're playing at home in a dome when you've got a young quarterback. The other side of the young quarterback is, if he is the way he, like, the Giants blitz the hell out of him. And that's kind of makes sense because he's a rookie making his first start. But if you're going into a game expecting him to play like a rookie, based on that first start at least, that doesn't seem to be what his skill set is. So that can kind of work against you as well as a defense. The only thing we have to really, really highlight though, Kyle Pitts was the creator of that interception. Yeah. And now the Kyle Pitts talk has been gone on for how long at this point of, oh, he'll be great once he gets an actual quarterback. How many quarterbacks have we gone through at this stage? He still is not performing. Now, maybe we can say, all right, in the playoffs, all we need is for him to get hot and go on a Larry Fitzgerald-type run for three or four games. And maybe that can happen, but I just don't see it. And I don't think there's enough talent on the offense overall, or on the team overall, sorry, for them to compete with the better teams in the division. So, hey, go out in your sword, a strong performance, a good debut couple of games at least for your rookie quarterback, and then not get embarrassed in the playoffs. That'll be a great season for the Falcons, to be honest with you, because where they're coming from was a bit of a laughing stock for the last couple of years, like with Desmond Ridder starting and stuff like that. At least there's excitement there now.
Can I ask briefly before we move off the Falcons, because I want to talk about other rookie quarterbacks. Raheem Morris came in there as, you know, someone who had the chance before, didn't work out, really excelled as a coordinator, and there was a sense of, like, now's his time. He's ready this time. He wasn't before. But we've seen that before with coaches. We've seen that with Josh McDaniels, for example, who was like, you know, oh, he went to the Broncos way too early, came back, you know, really knows now, and when he goes to the Raiders, it's going to be his time. And it wasn't, you know, and some people just aren't built to be a head coach. I like that he made the Cousins call when he did. I think that's a big deal. That's a big free agent. Now, it's easy when you've got the number 7 pick overall kind of waiting in the wings, but you're in a playoff run and so on. And I don't know, the Falcons have been a bit all over the place. We were giving out about their tactics and how they don't use the right players and so on earlier on, in, you know, only 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it's probably been a middle grade, I would imagine, in his first season. But have you seen enough that you would think that they've probably got the right man there? Because, and the reason I ask that is because don't forget that the reason Raheem Morris made headlines by being picked is everybody thought that Bill Belichick was going to the Falcons and he was meeting Arthur Blank for dinners and lunches and so on, and then they just went with Morris.
Well, it's a great point to keep us on this game for, because I did not expect Kirk Cousins to be benched last week, and now I'm like number one person who doesn't want to watch Kirk Cousins. I'm sick of watching him after 10 years of doing the same crap over and over again, and I've said that multiple times on this podcast already this year. But what normally happens is, when you invest as much money in a quarterback like that, especially an established quarterback like that, and he doesn't, like, he's been bad for like over a month. He hasn't thrown a touchdown in however long. He's thrown a bunch of interceptions, all that kind of stuff. But he didn't have like the 4 or 5 interception game, the 4 or 5 turnover game that you would typically need to push a quarterback like him off the starting spot. Even like the last game they had, he threw the ball something like 18 times. He threw a touchdown on a fake screen. I think he had 1 interception. Like, it wasn't, this guy's killing us game. Normally, that quarterback does not get benched. Normally, he stays in no matter who you've got behind him. So for Raheem Morris to make that decision, one, it tells you that he's in a great place with his ownership. Arthur Blank there is paying an awful lot of money to look like an idiot, because he's paying that much money to a quarterback who they're going to cut. So Arthur Blank has to be able to sit there and go, right, my head coach wants this. My head coach is making this decision. I'm going to trust him. I'm going to take the fire here. I'm going to be the one who's going to take the blame for all this, and I'm going to be the one who's out loads of money. But ultimately, I'm doing it because I trust what his direction for the team is and what his decision-making is right now. And curiously, we saw this happen with the Steelers earlier in the year when they changed from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson. Now, Mike Tomlin doing that is a polar opposite thing to Raheem Morris doing that. Raheem Morris needs this job to work out. He's in a similar position to Dan Quinn in Washington, where Dan Quinn had one go already as well. With the Falcons, wasn't it, specifically too. He did fairly well. Raheem Morris probably didn't do as well as Dan Quinn, so he needs this to keep building. I think the challenge for Morris is going to be that team, it's like, there's a level of expectation with that team, I feel, that isn't there with some of the others. Like, if you go to Seattle with McDonald's, the former Ravens coordinator, I was getting those two confused.
Yeah.
And if you go to Washington, I think both of those fan bases have a good idea of where their teams are at. I often feel like the Falcons have this kind of expectation relative to the actual talent on the team that is just not very accurate and not fair, and that makes it a very difficult place to be a head coach. But look, as far as this season goes, as far as me and you both sat here kind of thinking that should have been Belichick, I think they've proved me wrong at least, and they've put them in a position where they're like, look, we can win this division. I know it's not a massive division to win, but it was not an easy division for them to win considering the season that they've had. So you've got to give him a lot of credit, and like, it's a results-based business and he's getting results.
Yeah, fair enough. The other, obviously, rookie quarterback who's going to take all the headlines, there's loads to talk about with the Eagles-Commanders game. It was the game of the day, though. It was like that, like, outside of analysis, like, these are the games we want to be watching on a Sunday evening. Like, it was just, it was a real classic. But to have five turnovers, and I would say very few of them were the fault of Jaden Daniels, but like, he had one of those games where at one point, like, the interception where he threw it across his body into the middle of the field, and you're like, God, you really didn't see it there. That you just, we haven't been used to seeing that from him. And his play has obviously leveled off a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but there was also so many moments in there that you take out the inexperience, you take out the little mistakes that you expect a rookie quarterback to make, and there's so, and not least the game-winning touchdown and the game-winning drive in general, where you go, like, I can see myself watching this guy for the next 10, 15 years, leading playoff-bound teams constantly, because he just has everything you need in a quarterback, and that's poise, his accuracy is incredible. The ball he threw into triple coverage, I can't remember to what receiver it was, but it was unbelievable. Like, this loop, the kind of a beautiful faded ball. But game-winning touchdown is going to be a real signature moment for him, I think, isn't it?
He's very early in his career, and he's already developing this aura. I hate using that word because it's one of those ones that's overused by everyone now. He's developing this aura of inevitability in these moments, and it's just that the skill set is a big part of it, because he can beat you in so many different ways, because there's no way to actually game plan for him. It's like, oh yeah, let's keep him in the pocket and force him to beat us in the pocket. Yeah, he's a natural pocket passer. That's his first thing he wants to do. That's the way he wants to play. But then you're like, all right, let's pressure him and let's force him out of the pocket. And you're like, okay, as soon as he gets out of the pocket, he can run away from everyone. And like, you saw him make a defender miss on a key 3rd and 10 late in the fourth quarter on that drive that before the touchdown, where he didn't really spin. He juked outside and the defender just flew right by him. And then he ran past another defensive back. And you're kind of like, this is your quarterback. How is he making these defenders look like idiots? And it's like, this is what Lamar Jackson does all the time. But you could argue, like, the starting foundation of skill set for Daniels compared to Jackson, but when Jackson was a rookie, is much higher, because he's that much comfortable in the pocket. And you saw it on that game-winning touchdown. That game-winning touchdown to Jameson Crowder is similar to a throw he made against the Ravens earlier this year, where the point when he's releasing the football makes it impossible for the defense to stop that. Like, if you're just watching that at home and you're kind of going, you see it in the broadcast, you're thinking, oh, Jameson Crowder's wide open. How did the defense, like, what did they do wrong there? How did they mess that up? And then you see the replay from the end zone angle, and Jaden Daniels is releasing the ball when Crowder is like 2 yards in front of the defender going across his body. It's like, how could you expect the defender to somehow turn, go to a spot he's not even looking at? He's not even expecting the wide receiver to go to when the ball's already in the air. The timing he has, the intelligence he has, this is one of these guys that's just truly, truly special. And like you mentioned, like, he has that playoff mentality, that playoff mindset, that I'm going to make a big play when I need to make a big play. Everything's going wrong. Everything's falling apart around me. That's fine. I'll pick up the next play and I'm still going to be great. I'm not going to be scared to throw into a window just because I got picked off on the previous drive. I'm not going to not throw to this wide receiver outside because he fumbled on the bubble screen we last gave him. And he's elevating guys all around him. Like, Brian Robinson is a really good runner, but he's being a more effective player because of Jaden Daniels behind him. But the big one for me as well, and it's a big kind of storyline of this yesterday, was Olamide Zaccheaus. Yeah. Zaccheaus was with, he's been around the league, he's been in a bunch of different teams, but for him, yesterday must have felt so good. You're going against a team that got rid of you as the wide receiver number three receiver on the depth chart, and they took the guy whose job you took in Washington to be their number three. He hasn't been able to replace you in Philadelphia, and you're thriving in Washington in what's essentially the number two role. Like, Terry McLaurin makes those big plays on the sideline, but Zaccheaus was the one who made the big play in the fourth quarter to get the touchdown before the final touchdown. So there's just so much to be excited about in that team, and like, it's a great time to be a Washington fan.
But it's such a good point, because I think I've always been a big fan of Terry McLaurin in terms of his talent and his big play ability and all, but he doesn't, he's one of those guys that you almost looks like he plays in the slot but doesn't. And, you know, he's four catches a game sometimes, you know, maybe six on a big day, but they're big plays. They get you, scores a lot of the time. But, you know, it's not as if they have a go-to tight end or anything like that. I think he threw to Zach Ertz in the fourth quarter, and the commentator said our first throw to a tight end today. But, like, you have guys like, I don't mean no name, it's harsh because you say it in a positive way. I agree with everything you say, but it's guys like Zacchaeus and Crowder and all these, like, who, you know, they're not household names. They're not really, they haven't done it anywhere else. They're not, like, you know, top line NFL receivers. And this guy's a rookie, you know. And sometimes you kind of say, we can't come on and talk about him again, you know. And it's like, the Eagles are probably a bigger story coming out of this game. Like, Washington aren't going to win the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts gets injured. But I'm blown away by him. And I was blown away by CJ Stroud last year, but this is on another level. Like, this is, I can't believe the roundness of his game. You mentioned Lamar there, and it's a really good point because we see Lamar as a very good pocket player now, thrower of the ball, the yards he picks up through the air are nearly the first thing you think about, and it's like he backs it up with the running and the getting out of the pocket. But don't forget, for the first year and a half of him, it's like he had to prove that he could throw the ball. There was no, you know, it was like he's so effective because he's this, like, you know, Michael Vick 2.0. And of course, there was far much more to Lamar than that. And I think there was probably a little bit of prejudice involved in some of that analysis. But you couldn't, no prejudice in the world could tell you that this guy can't throw the ball.
Yeah, I'm mostly just annoyed that you are being so disrespectful to the other McCaffrey, in Luke McCaffrey there, and all the great work he's doing with his one catch per game. No, you're 100% right. Like, the supporting cast there is not great. And the one thing we have to talk about as well that we haven't even mentioned yet is we've come on here previously and spoken about how dominating that Eagles defensive line is. And don't get it wrong. Just because Washington won yesterday, the defensive line wasn't still dominant. And they shut down a 4th-and-1 play. They shut down a bunch of different plays. The constant pressure they were getting. Josh Sweat coming off the edge is having such a phenomenal season. But and it comes back to what we were saying. Like, Daniels beats you in the ways he has to beat you. It's kind of a Mahomes-like thing of, oh, what way do I need to win today? Do I need to complete 10 short passes, or do I need to hit 4 deep balls? Whatever you need me to do, I'll do it for you. So, like, the talent is undeniable. He probably benefited from, through the draft process, everyone was about on Caleb Williams. The actual, more of the argument was probably about Drake May going over to Caleb Williams rather than Jaden Daniels going over to Caleb Williams. That's a big reason for that is because he had Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. A lot of people discredited him. Like, you'd be amazed watching him now being like, he was considered like a poor deep passer in college. I never really understood, because when you went through the tape, it was like, look at all the throws he's making. But I think it was largely about, oh, he's got these spectacular athletes, so no one can give him too much credit because he's got those spectacular
Malik
athletes.
Nabers.
And now he doesn't have that.
Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas were his receivers.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
LSU.
I knew Thomas was LSU. I didn't realize Nabers was. That's, so he has genuinely, last year at college, he had arguably the two, like, he certainly had two better receivers than he does now.
Well, relative to playing against college defensive backs,
relative to real life, what the... Play a first half with those two, and a second half with the other, with his guys now, and he's gonna do better in the first half. That's unbelievable.
But that's the thing. Like, as much as I think Terry McLaurin's one of the best receivers in the league, most people don't.
I do. I'm a fan. He was on my redraft fantasy league this year. I've always been a fan of McLaurin. I think he's great.
But, like, the reason for that is, like, the people who would like to discredit Jaden Daniels, it's not like they're going to turn around and talk about McLaurin being Randy Moss or being the superstar receiver he's relying on. And you mentioned the tight end as well. Zach Ertz is not only old, he's playing hurt. Like, the reason he caught one ball at the end of that game was because he's not fully fit. So there's just so many issues there. The fact that they've won as many games as they have is a complete testament to the quality of Jaden Daniels. And I suppose you've got to give the coaching staff some bit of credit, as much as I don't want to give the offensive coordinator any. But let's not get into that again.
Yeah. Look, I'm in a fantasy semi-final in a big dynasty thing, and you know, it's looking unlikely. I need 3 Green Bay players to go absolutely nuts tonight. But one of the things that was looking very good was Saquon's first half, and he was bottled up in the second half, and it really does show. We talked a little bit about it earlier in the year that, like, quarterbacks are as important to the running game as they are to the passing game, and, you know, once poor old Kenny Pickett was in. We know where his career trajectory is. There was really no room for runners or for receivers. And, like, it was a huge part in Washington winning that game. So we can talk about Jaden Daniels all we like. It doesn't necessarily put Washington's stock any higher going into the playoffs. But the Eagles, you almost wouldn't worry too much, wouldn't you not? Like, we talked about Hurts in detail last week. He's playing well enough that if this isn't too serious, he's back either next week or the week after going into the playoffs. They're in great shape. They would have won that game, to me anyway, if Hurts had played the full 60 minutes.
Well, there was one concussion at the weekend. I can't remember, was it a Saturday game where I think it was a running back who literally kind of flipped over and landed on his neck and his back, and he was knocked out straight away. I can't remember. I think it was in the Ravens game. But he was complete, Justice Hill, he was completely unconscious as soon as he touched the ground, and it was terrifying. Whereas the Jalen Hurts concussion, and now I'm not saying this is the way it works.
You can't judge it that way.
But from a visual perspective, like, Jalen Hurts stood up and was walking back to the huddle, and the official was like, hey, you look like you're a little bit cloudy. Go get checked. He went to the sideline. He picked up his helmet and was trying to come back into the game. Mm. And whatever medical professional on the side was like, no, come back into the blue tent again. We want to make sure you're good. And he was ruled out then. So, look, I'm not going to turn around and say that means he's going to be back next week. But generally, we don't have, like, the obvious thing of when Tua got knocked out. It was like, oh, he's gone for a month. We're looking at this as, oh, he might be back next week. He might be back in 2 weeks. He'll probably be back in 3 weeks for the playoffs, you would hope. So, if he's not, then you're really
They're in trouble. Because Pickett's not good enough. But, I don't think it's the case. So, I would say, if I'm an Eagles fan anyway, I'm like, annoyed for the 5 minutes after the game because you've lost the last second to a last second touchdown against one of your rivals. But overall, it's not season defining. I think they're in good shape.
It also just really highlights
AJ Brown had a good game as well.
Yeah, he really showed up, actually. He had a couple of spectacular plays after the catch, and then at the catch point in between, a couple of defenders
got a flag, pick it out. Yeah.
It actually made Pickett look better than he was, even though he didn't look very good as he was. But the one thing that's kind of interesting there as well is we've spent a lot of the season talking about how Jalen Hurts has been a problem and how he's kind of holding the Eagles back. And as soon as you see the backup, you're like, Jalen Hurts, we've no issues with Jalen Hurts. Get Jalen back in, please.
It happens a lot, doesn't it? And it does show you as well how there is only ever 20 players who are good enough to play in that position at any one time. That is like in America's most popular sport, there is only ever 20 guys that are good enough to do that in a 32 team league. And I remember even when Tua was out earlier in the season, and it's like nobody rates Tua. Everyone just spends all day, every week giving out about Tua, not least Dolphins fans. And then the backups come in, you're like, well, God, like Tua's better than this. Like, you know, it's like he might be on the lower end. He might be in the lower end of the starters, and he might not win you a Super Bowl. And he might not be your franchise guy forever, but you're better off with him than, like, you know, me.
Are you suggesting you did not enjoy watching Mac Jones throw dimes in the fourth quarter against the Raiders last night?
There you go. Are you telling me that Trevor Lawrence's stock hasn't gone up since in the last couple of weeks? Since your man jumped into his head. Oh, I don't know.
That's
a little
bad
bit.
He's been, to be fair.
It's not Mac Jones. Well, let's talk a little bit about the state of kind of quarterback play. I was thinking about this today. So, you know, I think the Jags are probably going to stick with Lawrence anyway. But looking at Cleveland last night, like, I mean, that's a farce. They're going nowhere. It's not that guy whose name I refuse to remember, something Thompson. And it's not, it's certainly not him.
It's not even Thompson. This is his last name there, by the way.
What is it?
he's got a name after Thompson.
Okay. Well, it's his first name, something Thompson something then. You know, it's not Jameis, obviously. And look, no matter how much money they've invested in him, it's clearly not, I've blanked.
Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun, right. It's clearly not him either. So what does a team like that do? What does the Las Vegas Raiders do in a draft that nobody mad fancies the quarterbacks? I know by March they'll have talked themselves into it, which happens all the time. But you look at history, there are quarterback drafts and there are not quarterback drafts. And generally, they don't get it wrong. Generally, the ones that they say at this time of year aren't good quarterback drafts tend not to be, no matter where they end up drafting them and so on. They don't it doesn't happen. Now, you'll know a lot more about this than me, and you'll know the specifics of it more than I will, but I'm just going by what the general thing is. So obviously the Giants will take one of them. The Raiders have knocked themselves out of the top two by winning last night, so you'll see what happens there. There's obviously trades available, but Cleveland need a quarterback. There's a good few teams in there that need somebody. So there's no draft. The free agents aren't much to think about, right? Sam Darnold is going to be a free agent. You would have to think if he wins a playoff game with the Vikings, they're going to find a way to get him back on their team next year. And Kirk Cousins, who's washed up, will probably end up a free agent, it looks like. But other than that, here's some of the names. Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Jacoby Brissett, Taylor Heineke, Marcus Mariota, Drew Locke, who I got to see a good bit of last night. My God. Jared Stidham, Andy Dalton, Justin Fields, Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston, Mac Jones, Carson Wentz, Jimmy Garoppolo, Case Keenum, Mason Rudolph, Easton Stick, remember him, Cooper Rush, Josh Dobbs.
I'm sorry.
Right?
I love the way you said Easton Stick, remember him, as if he's ever done anything at all.
Well, just he was like, wasn't name. He like, he didn't he come in and was like, whoa, what's this guy doing in the NFL? Kyle Allen, Russell Wilson. Right, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see him earlier on, but that's interesting. Tommy DeVito and other people I've never heard of, right? Like, there's not much to go on there. So what do you do when you're in quarterback limbo? What do you do? And look, I mean, I take the Browns as an example. There's other teams who need quarterbacks. But say the Browns, they're also in cap hell. Where do you go as a franchise? Are you going into this season riding off 2025 as well? And you've got Myles Garrett, one of the best defensive players of all time, sitting around going, this is my life. I'm going to be on 3-14 teams for the rest of my life.
Myles Garrett got the 100th sack of his career, the youngest player to ever get 100 sacks in a game where he was losing 14-0. And it was like, that's the most perfect thing for Myles Garrett's career. They went from Joe Thomas never winning anything, being possibly the best left tackle ever, to having Myles Garrett possibly the best defensive end ever, never winning anything. So that's just the Cleveland Browns in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So I think there's one name you left off there as well, who I think is going to be a free agent, he should be, because I don't think he would have signed a multi-year contract with Minnesota. Daniel Jones is another one. Like, we talk about this all the time, where these quarterbacks come in and it's like, why are the Raiders starting Gardner Minshew this year? Why is Aiden O'Connell their alternative? But it's like, well, because there's probably not many options that they have. A lot of these teams get trapped in these areas, and you kind of think to yourself, the best thing for you to do right now is trade away all your pieces and go hit the reset button. But then someone like the Vikings will turn around and argue, we picked up Sam Darnold. It worked out brilliantly for us. The one on the list
most
you mentioned...
Most times that doesn't work, though.
Yeah. On the list you mentioned there, who I would be looking at, is Marcus Mariota. And for the reason for that is I always thought he was a very good quarterback who had a kind of a harsh treatment in Tennessee. Look,
he was fine, wasn't it, with the Falcons last year? But pulling up trees, though. Like, you're still in limbo if you've got Mariota at this stage of his career anyway.
Yeah, but you're not coming here getting a quarterback who's a top 10 quarterback. You know what I mean? We're talking about the dredges of the league right now.
I know.
But
I know.
I think he's the one that's most likely to do a Geno Smith, the second half of your career, where you turn into a serviceable, effective starter, a guy who has probably learned a lot from what he's gone through in different spots. He came in earlier this year in Washington, played well in the game. I think he was playing against the Jaguars out there, someone awful who was easy to throw a bunch of touchdown passes against. Actually, it was the Panthers, which at the time when the Panthers were at their worst. So there isn't really an obvious solution. If we take the Browns' options are going to be Kirk Cousins, who probably won't make sense financially because you've got that Deshaun Watson contract still there. I know they might be able to get out of it, but they won't be able to get out of it cheaply, as far as I know. Injury guarantee might be a little bit smaller than the regular guarantee, but they'll have to figure that part out. I think from then, you're looking at, if you're keeping Kevin Stefanski, you're actually in kind of a somewhat fortunate position compared to where you could be else otherwise, because he has that run-oriented, very clearly defined passing game offense where you can take, not an Andy Dalton, because Andy Dalton's too old, but you can take a quarterback who isn't necessarily got the highest skill set and you can put him in the offense and be like, right, we can get to a decent level, an acceptable level fairly quickly here. We won't be pulling up trees and scoring 30 points a game, but we might actually avoid all those turnovers that Jameis gives us. We might actually have a competent quarterback who can execute the offense, unlike Deshaun Watson. And now suddenly we can look like the Steelers. Like, that to me is probably Justin Fields off the list you gave, because he fits into that run-oriented offense. Even I know Trey Lance has kind of disappeared off the planet in terms of the NFL, but in terms of his skill set as well, he'd be another one I'd be looking at if I was Stefanski. Now, this all hinges on Stefanski still being there. If he's gone, I don't know what the hell you're going to do, because then you're resetting everything. But I think you go for those running quarterbacks. You try and mimic what the Steelers have just done. You won't probably win a Super Bowl doing it like that, but you'll keep your job for a little bit longer than you would expect it to.
Yeah, and that's the Browns. And I suppose the other teams that were in the top of my head were the Titans, who clearly it won't be Will Levis, and the Saints.
Or Mason Rudolph.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. The Saints are probably, like, I mean, they might be forced into going with Derek Carr again next year. You know, like, I mean, or Derek Carr is a great example. I suppose what I'm trying to get to here is that this limbo is a weird thing, and you'd almost, there aren't always obvious solutions, and you just laid out what maybe the best case scenario might be, but what tends to happen is, God, if only I had a magic wand, and then they think of the draft as a magic wand, and they talk themselves into it. And, you know, when we get down to the draft time, a couple of weeks before the draft, and you're hearing the Saints really, you know, you're hearing rumors that the Saints have really talked themselves into this, like, Division 3 quarterback who's never lost a game of football in his life, and he's from, like, you know, rural Nebraska, but he's got all the mentality, and he's 25 years old, and he's got it, and he, like, he absolutely won't be good enough for the NFL, but they'll convince themselves that he is. That'll be why. That's why they do it. It's pure desperation, and there isn't a logical solution, so you look for a magic solution.
And you know, the funny aspect of that is, depending on the quality of the draft, that conversation is happening with the first overall pick, or 20th pick, or in the second round. So if you've got look, we can't judge this year's class yet. I haven't even looked at this year's class yet, so I have no idea. But let's say, for example, Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward are superstars. Then this conversation is going to be, right, who's at the third overall pick? Do we reach for a Bo Nix type? Do we take a Michael Penix type? Because this time last year, Michael Penix and Bo Nix were like, oh yeah, they're third or fourth rounders. They're not going to be going in the top 10. And then ultimately what happens is they climb up the boards because of need and because they fill whatever boxes need to be ticked during the draft process. So there is an element of this. And, like, you can always wind up with a Russell Wilson, wind up with a Dak Prescott, guys who didn't go anywhere close to the top of the draft. It's just a matter of complete luck and the lottery of it. And look, that to me, like, I've never been a fan of the sign two quarterbacks, add two quarterbacks, and because that secures that position. But I can understand why teams go that direction. And if you're the Falcons right now, you're probably delighted that you went that direction. If you're the Minnesota Vikings, you did it to a lesser degree, but you're delighted too. You took J.J. McCarthy, and then you had added Sam Darnold as well, a little bit cheaper than Kirk Cousins, obviously. But he was signed as someone who was considered a borderline or a competing starter. So there's definitely ways to do it, and there's definitely ways to different approaches. The problem with it is, it all comes down to whether the guy you pick is good or not.
I know.
There isn't really a strategy to it. There isn't really a way to build a foolproof process for it.
Yeah, 100%. And it's so hard to get a quarterback. Like, I mean, that was why, like, watching the first half of the Bills and Pats last night, and you're thinking, like, regardless of Drake May's inexperience and the fact that he didn't close out the game and all, everything is there. And when you're just looking at a rookie, you're going, oh God, like, they will build the rest of this team. Because there is nobody. There is nobody. There's Christian Gonzalez and there is nobody. But they will build that team. You can find pieces in drafts, in free agency, in all in trades. You can build a team. You can't build a quarterback. You either find one or you don't. And it can take a decade. It can take two decades. And the relief when you know you have your guy is just, it's beyond compare, because there is no, it is the thing that just requires, I think, most luck of anything, because you don't know what you're getting before you get them, and so on.
And the desperation you're going to hear in this conversation is why teams end up paying so much money for average starters. And you're like, if this makes no sense, but then you're kind of like, oh yeah, this kind of makes some sense.
Could you see the Tennessee Titans in desperation trading for Derek Carr next year?
Oh, 100%.
And, like, they might only give up a fourth round pick, but then they'll be stuck with Derek Carr. You know what I mean?
And it's great. Just a terribly run football team in general.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. And it's also why it's like, you know, watching the Panthers won again last night, and it's so funny because the turnaround on what's wrong with me with names today?
Who's the quarterback?
On Bryce Young. The turnaround on him is absolutely incredible. But I wouldn't say he was overly impressive yesterday. You know, like, his stats were pretty poor and he didn't actually have a great game, but they won and they've turned around. The confidence that he has and the team has because of his resurgence has brought them up a good few levels to where you certainly thought they were capable of earlier in the year. But it's all right. Like, he doesn't actually, the fact that he's back in there now, it's like as if he's never been dropped. They're still in there with the experiment of him. It's bought him next year. He doesn't actually need to be very good anymore. He doesn't need to be showing those bursts that he did to get back into contention, because there's just no options. It's not as if they can afford to just say, yeah, we made a mistake there, ditch him. You know, nor should they, by the way, but it's, you know.
That's a critical thing too, though, because, like, and if you're coming to the NFL from other sports, you're like, oh, why do they talk about the quarterback so much differently about everything? It's partly because it's so important, obviously, and it's connected to every other position. But it's always been considered, like, coaches don't talk to quarterbacks the way they talk to offensive linemen. Like, quarterbacks have to be, like, nurtured and developed, and the personality aspect and the character and the side, and, like, you have to have this leadership role, you have to fill this, which is one of the questions with Caleb Williams right now, because of the way he's acting on the sideline and the way he's generally been as a personality, it rubs some people the wrong way. Like, there's comparisons to CJ Stroud crying over Tank Dell's injury this week, and everyone's kind of like, no, that makes sense. CJ Stroud is shedding tears because one of his best friends and one of his wide receivers and one of his teammates has suffered what seemed to be a devastating injury at the time, whereas Caleb is on a sideline and the team is losing by 2 touchdowns and he's like making all these faces and leaning over and doing all this body posture stuff, which in the grand scheme of things doesn't really matter. But when you're the quarterback, there's such a magnifying glass on you. All of these things matter, and all of these things impact the way your team is, the way your team is perceived, the way the franchise is perceived, which is why you can't, like, if you ever look at an offensive lineman being coached, they just get called idiots and get given out to, and if they do something wrong, they get shouted and roared at. Whereas when the quarterback does something wrong, it's more of a, all right, let's discuss this. Why did this happen? How can we improve here? What went wrong? It has to be cerebral. And that's just not the way it is in every other position.
It's so funny that is the case, because we were watching, I don't know if you watched the Patriots documentary, where they were showing some of the early footage of, like, training camp and all, and Belichick would be like, God damn it, Brady, what are you doing? And it was so kind of, whoa, I've never seen it. When you watch Hard Knocks, the quarterbacks are never talked to that way. Like, you know, it's like they're so protected. But anyway, yeah, that's, it's all an interesting conversation. We could go down loads of rabbit holes on them. It's funny, one person I was thinking of there, actually, and again, you can't move on from him because he's in a big contract and he's not that bad. But how many times are we going to be fooled into Kyler Murray started this season well?
that's definitely me this year.
My God, that guy has the best. He must be the best player in NFL history for the first 8 games of every season. But he was so poor yesterday in a game that we talked about the Panthers, you know, Young not being great and that team being better in general, but they shouldn't have won that game. And I don't know. I just feel like Murray gives you nothing at this. I don't know. He's an interception at the end of the game waiting to happen. He's panicking. He's running around. He's making bad decisions. His confidence just seems shot. He was on the sideline just looking utterly depressed constantly towards the end of that game, leaving his helmet on, sitting head and knees, basically. But, like, he's another one that's just like, where are you going here? You know, like, he's got the talent, bad injury profile, but, you know, he's not lasting the year.
So we can bring this full circle here now, because you're talking about what teams could do in the offseason. To me, you look at a guy like Kyler Murray and it's like, okay, he's got the potential to be a superstar. He could actually be one of the best quarterbacks in the league if things broke the right way. But I would much rather, if I'm in this position where I need a quarterback and I can't get one of the obvious stars, I would much rather have a guy who has a lesser skill set but plays to that skill set consistently,
yes,
who makes decisions repeatedly the same way. Because I can build an offense around that. Jared Goff is the obvious example. The Lions built an offense that worked around him because he plays to his skill set consistently, even if it's not a great skill set. Kyler Murray, you're always going to have the offense that he has because you just don't know what he's going to do play to play. And it's actually really disappointing, because as a rookie, he was so good. So good. And ever since then, it's just been like up, down, like, what are you going to be this week? What are you going to be this drive? We can't tell you from quarter to quarter what you're going to be. And that just never works out in the long run in the NFL.
Yeah, Jared Goff has 33 touchdowns this year, which is kind of remarkable with 2 games left. But
yeah, pretty good for a guy with a limited skill set.
I know. Yeah,
did you see the fake? Did you see the fake stumble?
We should talk about that. That was a beautiful, and it was also that Jamar Gibbs' place in it, where he kind of stumbled over and fell down, as Goff was pretending to stumble backwards with the ball, wide open to Laporta, who was against me in that fantasy match that I'm talking about. As was the Atlanta defense, by the way, who got 26 points against the pathetic New York Giants. So nobody wants to hear about my fantasy team.
But the my favorite part of that play is actually Jared Goff going over afterwards with the pictures of it happening, showing it to the coach like a proud child. Was like, see how good I fake this.
Here's the thing, though, and why do you use that play in a pointless game against the Bears in week 16? Whatever it is. Yeah.
I had the exact same thought. I don't like that's a playoff.
That's going to work in the playoffs, you know?
My guess is Ben Johnson has probably got 10 more. You know what I mean? The way his brain is, he's creating these types of players all the time. Yeah. He's the next Andy Reid, essentially. Andy Reid always had something new every single year, and he breaks something out in the first game of the playoffs every single year. Mm. And now this is the same thing that Ben Johnson's doing.
Okay, speaking of Andy Reid, we're probably going to have to skip a few of these things. We'll skip, like, Ja'Marr Chase, we could talk about again. The Bengals are still involved. They're going to be an interesting team in the next few weeks. He's 1,500 yards. Unbelievable career. You know, he's always going to be, him and Justin Jefferson seem to be like 1 and 2, and Justin Jefferson had an insane game yesterday as well. Sam Darnold comes from behind, and Minnesota just don't seem to know how to lose games, which I think is just a really interesting style of team heading into the playoffs, and obviously we'll see how they get on. They have to beat Green Bay and Detroit and could end up being the number one seed, which would just blow you away. It's a big task to win both of those games. But let's just talk about the Chiefs quickly before we finish, right? So, got the job done again Saturday afternoon over there against the Texans. Mahomes' ankle injury looking like there's nothing wrong with him, really. Like, I mean, he ran for first downs and touchdowns in the first quarter, kind of showed that there was really nothing there. But outside of that, even, you were making the point to me that his ability to just see what's there and take full advantage of it, even without all the talent in the world or without all of the domination that you would expect a 3 Super Bowl team to have, it's just his brain is just ahead of everybody else's.
Was it Troy Brown and David Patton were the wide receivers? Jabari Gaffney, I think, was another one.
Gaffney was later on. It would have been like 2006. Deion Branch, David Givens.
Oh, Deion Branch.
Yeah.
Deion Branch was good, though.
Deion Branch is a good player, yeah. They got a first-round pick for him.
But there was a stretch in Brady's career where it was like...
The first Super Bowl was who you said first there. It was Patton and Troy Brown, yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah. I'm actually probably thinking a little bit afterwards, after he's developed from his rookie stages, when he's in that stretch before he gets Randy Moss, where it's like he's still putting up really good numbers, but the offense is not really explosive. It's kind of contained. He works in the small boxes. He just cuts defenses apart over and over and over again. And this is what this Chiefs offense looks like to me right now. It's everything's short, but everything is the right decision at all times. It's like he's making these decisions before the defense has even gotten into this coverage drop. Like if you're playing a cover 3 zone and your safety has to get from one side of the field to the other to sell it, Mahomes knows where that safety's going before the safety takes his first step. He knows it based on the alignment of the defense. And I can understand all this talk about, oh, they get all these calls and all the flags are going their way. And I'll be honest with you, anyone who's complaining about that from Saturday is ridiculous, because the calls that were made were all correct. I don't know how you're giving out about the hit to the head. I don't know how you're giving out about the pass forward that was initially called a fumble. It was no way a fumble. But the overall quality and execution that he's giving you is just insane. Like he's seeing the running back going to the flat. He's seeing that the coverage has been blown as the ball is snapped. It's what Peyton Manning used to do. It's what Tom Brady used to do. It's what Philip Rivers was great at during his peak as well, where you're just always one step ahead of the defense. And if you're already the best player in the league and now you're one step ahead of everyone at all times, it's like, hey, Usain Bolt, take a 10-meter head start and 100 meters there. We'll try and beat you. That's never going to happen. Like the way he plays, the way the offense has functioned, it's just so incredibly impressive. I thought we'd be coming on here talking about an injured Mahomes and how his ankle held up and all that kind of stuff. On the very first drive, he was scrambling for big gains. He was a little bit slower than normal, but he was still able to do it. He was still able to turn and twist and move, and he was able to break tackles to get into the end zone for the touchdown that he got as well. Like, it's ridiculous. This guy is the best quarterback I've ever seen. He will remain the best quarterback I've ever seen until something drastically changes. Mm. And it's very, very difficult to argue with it. I know Brady is there and beloved and all that kind of stuff, but he can do everything that Brady could do. Brady can't do everything that he could do. The only thing that's left is for him to rack up these Super Bowls. And it doesn't look like that's not going to, and it doesn't look like that's going to be stopped, even while we've got all these ridiculously talented other quarterbacks in the league right now.
Yeah, well, he's been in four of the last five. They've won three and they were in the AFC Championship game and the other one. Like, it's not... The level of consistency is already there with the... Like, you look at Brady's... You look at that Belichick-Brady run, and it was obviously longer, but, you know, comparatively. And the thing was, they were getting to the AFC Championship game every year. Or they were getting to the... It wasn't that they're making the Super Bowl every year. Teams don't do that. But the Chiefs are nearly taking it a step further. They've never been outside of the AFC Championship game in the Mahomes era, you know? So it's quite astonishing. Like, the 2006 Patriots, who lost in a ridiculous way to the Colts in the AFC Championship game, and one of the worst losses in franchise history, had a wide receiving core of Troy Brown, Rashee Caldwell.
Oh, yeah.
Who have I got here? Sorry, I've missed them. Jabbar Gaffney, as you mentioned, and one other guy I can't even see. I've never heard of the other
person. The other thing
anyway,
about that is...
As like, so nobody, had those... nobody, basically. And it was before the tight ends.
That's what I was going to say. He didn't have a tight end either. He had like Kevin Falk, and that was probably it.
Kevin Falk probably caught 90% of the passes. Yeah.
So the other, I don't know if you've read it in front of you there, but you might have or might not. Don't if you haven't already. Do you know that the four teams I have listed here? The four teams who haven't scored 31 points this season?
No, but I know it's the Pats because they haven't got 30 in 48 games, which is...
So,
like, sorry, just try and remember how many games there are in a season and tell me how long.
And they played like the Raiders and the Giants in that time as well.
They haven't scored 30 points in. So what's the number 31?
So have you the team? This was entering.
I know who one of them are. The big headline.
The 31 points is the team that haven't scored 31 points this year. Obviously the Chiefs are one, since we're talking about the Chiefs. That's crazy, okay? But it only becomes crazy when you realize who the other teams are. Because the other teams are the Patriots, the Giants, and the Raiders. Entering this weekend, the Chiefs have 13 wins this year, and the other three teams combined for 7. It's like, how are you scoring that the same rate as the worst teams in the league and winning every single week? It doesn't make any sense at all.
They were 1, 2, and 3 in the draft order before the Raiders won last night, so there you go.
And the Raiders played the Jaguars, so I mean, it's not like they beat a big team, you know?
Do you know something, though? Heading in, and we'll segue this into like a look ahead to the two Christmas Day matchups, because I do think people will watch it. It's on Netflix. It's something a bit different. I've found the Chiefs, they're doing all the same things. The score lines are the same, but I think they look in better shape than they did 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They're coming into they're not pulling out games because of miracle field goal blocks. They're winning these games now, and they seem like they're actually ready to step it up a little bit here.
Well, they've moved Joe Thuney to left tackle, and Joe Thuney can't play left tackle, but they've had such issues on the offensive line that Joe Thuney being left tackle has actually helped them quite a bit. Joe Thuney's an all-pro centre and all-pro left guard. He's not athletic enough to play outside, and he was exposed a couple of times, but he gives you a level of consistency at that position, and he lets you run the ball left as well more easily with him at left tackle. DJ Humphries is expected to come back and play that, and which will move Thuney back inside. I don't know if they'll do that based on the performances so far. The other aspect is Pacheco is healthy, and then you have the wide receivers are just coming into their own. DeAndre Hopkins has developed an understanding with Mahomes. He hasn't put up big numbers, but he is going to probably develop that consistently as the season has gone on. And Wordy, we've talked about him previously, like he's playing well within that role that we didn't expect him to be in. The Hopkins one is the key one for me, though, because there was 2 third downs and then there was a third big play as well where they needed him. He made all of those plays, and there was a back shoulder throw down the left sideline at a critical moment where you saw that ability when it's man coverage and a defender tries to bully him and it's a younger cornerback, and the younger cornerback's more athletic than Hopkins at this stage. But Hopkins has that size, he has that route running, and then he has the footwork and hands to work the sideline as well as anyone. So when you've got Mahomes' intelligence to go, right, they're playing this aggressive coverage, I know the back shoulder's open here, I've got DeAndre Hopkins, this is easy, I can hit that wide catch radius without even trying. We're going to see more and more of that, I think, as the playoffs come along, and you're just going to see Reed putting these guys in positions to thrive. Like Kelsey obviously hasn't done a whole lot this year, and hasn't in recent weeks either, but I think the offense as a whole is just more rounded than it was previously.
Yeah, and Kelsey will get more space if you're giving more balls to the three receivers, the two you mentioned, and obviously then Hollywood Brown came back, and they brought him in the summer. Yeah. It wasn't like a big headline free agent move, but it was one of those ones where you're thinking, like, this could work out. He's young enough, he's talented enough, And he's had moments in the NFL. He wasn't like complete bust. It was just circumstances didn't necessarily work out. He was playing in Arizona with backup quarterbacks and so on for a couple of years after he left Baltimore. And I don't know, you know what, better than me, but he's not necessarily going to do it, but he's who the Chiefs are looking for to kind of fill that player that they've never had, that hasn't worked out in like Hardman or Kadarius Toney or, you know, these guys, they just want that kind of like deep threat receiver who's actually going to work out. And I feel that without much pressure on him, with the balls going to the running backs, to Kelce, to Hopkins and to Worthy, he just could just get lost in the shuffle there and get a couple of big plays every game.
So one of the first plays he made at the weekend was a fourth down conversion where he ran a drag route across the field. So that's a short crossing route, yeah, where he just runs along the line of scrimmage. He has... So Marquise Brown's big issue over the years was when he was trying to be a number one receiver in Baltimore, is he didn't have the size for it, yeah, and he dropped too many passes. And he's not a very big receiver, but he has a level of speed. And now at this stage of his career, he has a level of experience and intelligence there to understand coverages and how to run past them and how to find the soft spots, which is something that Worthy doesn't have. So Worthy can be the guy who takes like the scary place for a defense, who is that explosiveness and that crazy kind of take a top off stuff. Now Marquise Brown is in a position where, oh, my speed is still going to be critical here, but it's not necessarily going to be the deep roll. It's going to be quick out routes, the quick stuff that you can fit, that Rashee Rice would have done previously. So it's actually a great point. He's going to be a perfect fit there with what they've already got. It's not like a great receiving core, but it's a great complement to each other. It's a very congruent receiving core. Like, I complement what you do, you complement what I do, and we both complement what he does, which means Andy Reid, being the mad scientist, will find ways to get these guys open and have them make plays. Like, one of the key details of that experience as well is, if you go back to the Ravens game on Saturday, Lamar Jackson threw an interception over the middle because Rashad Bateman was running the same route that Marquise Brown was running, but he stopped when he was supposed to continue because he misread the coverage. Lamar threw the ball to the right spot, but he gets intercepted, and everyone's going, oh, Lamar, you're an idiot, he got intercepted, blah, blah, blah. But it was the wide receiver's fault. So when you have a guy like Marquise Brown in there who's played 8 years, played 9 years, whatever it is at this stage, he'll make that mistake far less often.
Yeah. All right, Christmas Day games then. Chiefs, Steelers, call it.
I mean, the Chiefs should beat the hell out of him because of that offensive line. The only way the Steelers win the game, though, is if he gets injured, which at this page is kind of like the only way of stopping the Chiefs, I guess. But I think it's going to be a weird game as well because you're going from Saturday to Wednesday. It could be a bit of a slop fest, to be honest, but hopefully not. Hopefully we'll get some big plays and we'll get some plenty of enjoyment out of it anyway.
Yeah, Texans-Ravens, same issue.
This will be a great game. I think this will be the one thing we haven't talked about here, and we won't get into it too much, but CJ Stroud needs a performance. Like, he did not play well on Saturday, and he has gotten to this stage now where teams know how to play against him, and he's not figuring out the solutions. He's throwing interceptions from clean pockets. He's misreading coverages they didn't misread before. So we need a big game from CJ Stroud, and the Ravens need to continue the momentum they got from winning at the weekend too. So two teams that desperately need to win there. I think the Cedar, if you only have time for one game, if you can only argue with the family that you need that one game, go for the Texans Ravens rather than the Steelers Chiefs.
And it's later as well, and everybody will be in a food coma and stuff like that at that stage anyway. So okay, great stuff. Christmas Day, two games. There's games all week. There's games on Thursday. There's three on Saturday on the kind of Sunday schedule. It's only one game, but it's like 6:30, 9:00, and then late, and then there's this usual Sunday slate. So loads to look forward to if you're going to spend your little break wanting to watch some NFL. And then we won't be back next week. We will be back after the Monday after the Week 18 games and getting ready for the first round of the playoffs. So looking forward to that, Keane. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you. You too.
US Sport on Off the Ball with 888 Casino, 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
Hi, Morgan Freeman here. I want to talk to you about a serious rare heart condition called ATTR cardiac amyloidosis, or ATTR-CM. Now, I don't have the condition myself, but if you're living with ATTR-CM, it's important to know about treatment options like Attruby, also known as acoramidis, because you have the power of choice when it comes to treatment. Attruby is an old medicine used to treat adults with ATTR-CM to reduce death and hospitalization due to heart issues. Tell your doctor if you're pregnant, plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding, and about the medications you take. The most common side effects were mild and included diarrhea and abdominal pain. If you have ATTR-CM, talk to your cardiologist about Attruby or visit Attruby.com. That's ATTRUBY.com to learn more. It's time to get busy living.